Now I'm working from the caravan, feeling pretty lazy, so nothing too fancy about this episode. If you've already listened to part one, you'll understand what we're doing here. Here, Sarah answers seven of your brilliant questions around mental health and motherhood. Let's get into it.
So question number one was, how do I overcome mum rage and better communicate my needs with my partner? I guess first to answer that one is to, I think, quickly understand a little bit about mum rage, and one, that it's super, super, super normal. And I would say a lot of mums experience it. And often mum rage, it thrives when we're running on empty. So it makes sense that a lot of mums feel rage or anger because a lot of the time we're not getting our needs met. And so if we look at mum rage, first we want to understand, I guess, a little bit, yeah, as I said, what's going on here to actually change it. One really helpful thing is to first identify the triggers. So usually mum rage is a buildup of a lot of things and not just one thing. So it's helpful to kind of ask yourself, well, when do I feel this most? What's going on, or what's underneath the anger? And so sometimes picturing anger as like an iceberg, so an anger iceberg. So at the tip of the iceberg is obviously the anger, and that's what you can see. And then below the surface of that anger iceberg is all the other emotions. So for example, that could be particularly in motherhood or early motherhood, or actually any time of parenting, but it could be stress, feeling dysregulated, overstimulated, exhausted, shame, guilt, frustration. There's so many different emotions. And a lot of the time you might experience all of those emotions really, really quickly in a day or in a couple of hours. So boiling underneath that is all those other emotions. And then what we see is the anger. And so first, the triggers are, maybe I've got a lot of other emotions going on. Why do I have all these other emotions going on? Typically, it's because it's really hard to get a lot of needs met. So it's looking at, okay, what aren't I getting met? What needs do I need to look at? And sometimes even in motherhood or in parenting, it can be simple things like, I'm actually not even meeting my basic physical needs of sleep, rest, nutrition, movement, because there's so much going on, or because I have a baby that doesn't sleep at night. So looking at it from that perspective can be useful in that we can kind of start to give ourselves a little bit more compassion. You know, of course I feel angry because today I didn't even get to eat breakfast, or of course I had that episode of rage because I'm exhausted, I haven't slept. And so that's why identifying those triggers can be helpful. What's going on for me? What need do I need to get met, or what do I need to look at to get my needs met? Here, I reckon it's important to talk about the anger guilt cycle as well, because I think that really goes hand in hand with mum rage. So often we might see ourselves during an intense mothering period where we might be self-sacrificing a lot. There's a lot of chronic unmet needs. That then leads to like depletion, burnout, resentment, chronic nervous system activation. So we're like kind of constantly in that fight or flight, which that then leads to those eruptions of anger or rage. And when that often happens, it's often out of alignment with what we value. It doesn't feel right, didn't sit right with me. Then that leads to guilt and shame. And so because of that guilt and shame that you might experience after that mum rage, we often have a desire to make up for that angry behavior. And often that looks like overcompensation. So the cycle just keeps going and going. So that's where, again, looking at what's going on for me and pairing it with that little bit of that self-compassion can take away that vicious cycle a little bit. So it's okay, you got frustrated. It's because there's a lot going on here. Let's strip it back. What needs do I need to look at? What do I need to put in place so I am, you know, able to support myself and focus on myself and look at what I need to kind of do moving forward to help myself in the best way possible? So it's kind of, yeah, looking at that, identifying the needs, pairing it with that compassion, and then obviously regulating in the moment. So when it happens, we're obviously really stimulated and overstimulated, and that nervous system is pretty much in overdrive. So it can be really important to use simple things like connecting with your breath, stepping backwards a little bit, stepping outside for some grounding if you can, using some like physical biofeedback for your body. So like pushing that anger out, getting it out of the body. So pushing against a wall can be really helpful in actually physically releasing that anger. It can be useful and kind of fun to do with kids, so you can model healthy anger. Because often, I guess, if you think back to, I don't know, maybe your childhood, it wasn't modeled in a healthy way. And that's why we might have an interesting relationship with anger. So it's teaching your kids anger's okay, it's normal emotion, but this is how we can get it out of our body. So that could look like dance parties with kids, or roaring like a dinosaur, or screaming into your pillow. And these are like physical things that can move the anger through the body, which is what we need. If we don't move it, it gets stuck. Which leads to more rage, leads to some more resentment, and things like that. So that's really important. Another helpful strategy that I do a lot with my clients is some inner child work. So, kind of identifying what's going on here for me. Is my inner child coming out, and why? So that might look like kind of going backwards a little bit and going, when I experienced anger back then, when I was a child, what did I need to feel safe and supported? And often that's coming up for you as an adult still. So that might look like going, what did my 8-year-old version of me or that 10-year-old little girl need back then to feel love and support and safe? It might be a hug visually, or it might be kind of words of support, or it might be a shield or anything to kind of work on that inner child, because it does often come up. And so that can be a really helpful strategy to kind of work through overcoming that mum rage. What's going on for me? What are those triggers? Is this my inner child? And then regulating in the moment. So, doing those things I was talking about, and kind of, yeah, like shaking the body, get the body moving, get the anger out, can be super helpful. And then, I guess, tying into back to that second part of the question. So, how do I communicate better with my partner? Often, I guess, that resentment does build up. Particularly with partners, if we aren't communicating, or if we are again having chronic unmet needs, but we're not kind of communicating that or reaching out for support. So it's really obviously important to do that. And when you are communicating to your partner, trying to do it when you're not mid-argument or you're not in a fight, choosing maybe a calm moment, or actually scheduling in like regular check-ins with your partner can be really helpful. So, kind of, I don't know, setting up your iCloud together and going, on Sunday afternoon, we just have regular check-ins with each other, see how we're going. And then there are those really nice moments to go, hey, this is what I need around the house to kind of help me feel supported a little bit more. And also keeping in mind, this comes up a lot, I think, with partners, is catching yourself if you're doing a little bit of mind reading. So this is an unhelpful thinking style in that it often leads to a lot of anxiety or resentment or overwhelm or any kind of negative emotion, where we assume we know what someone else is thinking first. So we assume we know what our partner's thinking, or we assume we know what a friend's thinking. Often it's quite negative. But it works in the other way of we assume that our partner should know what we're thinking. And so that could be, you should know I wanted the dishwasher unstacked tonight, or he should have known that I needed help with XYZ, kind of mind reading, where a lot of the time if we sit back, we go, well, I can't read his mind, just as he can't read my mind, or my partner can't read my mind. So catching yourself if you're doing that, and then if you are actually communicating what you think they should be knowing. Another helpful way, I guess, to communicate with your partner is using what we call I statements. And so this is kind of just setting out you what you're wanting to say in like a structured way. So it typically starts with, when you do XYZ, I feel, so stating the feeling. We often forget to state the feeling. So I feel stressed, or I feel anxious, or I feel sad. When you, I feel. And then adding the why you're feeling that way. So again, we often miss this part, and that's where it might kind of look like a blame or a quick leads to an argument, because we're not explaining why we're feeling a certain way. And that can be the key in your partner going, oh, I didn't realize that. So it's often when you, I feel because, so stating that reason, and then pairing it perhaps at times with, I would prefer that we did this. So using I statements can be a really helpful way to communicate with your partner. And then it just does also open up that communication channel for you guys to both go, okay, how can we then carve out the time to figure this out? Or how can we meet your needs? Or how can we prioritize XYZ? Question two, tips for how to cope with mess, loud noises, and minimal alone time to regulate. Again, I'm going to say this is very normal in terms of struggling with that sensory overload because it's a lot. And so I think one thing is shifting the perspective a little bit. So the goal isn't to eliminate all the mess, all the noise, all the exhaustion, all the alone time, because that's actually a lot of the time quite hard to do and impossible. So it's around shifting that perspective and trying to build in little moments of relief so you don't burn out. And so sometimes it's around, yeah, shifting that perspective or managing your expectations or even lowering the bar a little bit. So checking in with yourself, asking yourself if it's in terms of mess, is this actually urgent right now? Do I need to get to this right now? Or having, particularly with mess, I think this is a helpful, useful strategy, having like a dump basket or a area in your house which you kind of might just dump a little bit of that mess just in those moments when you actually can't get to all of it and you can sort it out later, but it kind of clears that mind a little bit because you've got a zone in the house that might be a little bit clear. It's in the dump basket. It's not perfection, but we're lowering the bar a little bit because otherwise you're just going to set yourself up for failure because the clutter and mess is going to be there with children, unfortunately. Yeah, so reframing that a little bit. In terms of, I guess, coping with loud noises, that can be again a tricky one because it's always there. But practical tools, using headphones if you can, listening to your own kind of calm, quiet music, stepping away if it's safe to do so when you're just feeling so overwhelmed with that sensory overload, stepping into the bathroom, taking a few deep breaths. Stepping outside as well can be a useful one, even with the kids, for all of you to kind of have that nervous system reset or a little bit of that grounding. And using, if you can, quiet time with the kids. Maybe it's for them having a game that's quiet or a little bit of TV time, even just for 10 minutes where it's turned down quietly. Again, you can kind of step aside when you're feeling so overwhelmed just to get a little bit of that sensory reset because it's hard. In terms of, I guess, finding alone time when it's all pretty much physically impossible some days, trying to carve out mini micro moments. So, again, that might be carving out some time where the kids are having quiet time. And if they're feeling safe, you're sitting on the couch, kind of resting your eyes, or sitting on the couch doing some deep breaths, using naps, like nap opportunities. If they're napping in the car, using that time for you of having some quiet time, even though you're not physically alone, they're there sleeping. But I guess you're trying to carve out those micro moments. So sitting alone in the car in silence for a little bit if you can, or if you've got a partner, even if it's just 10 minutes of tag teaming as much as you can, or waking up even can be helpful 10 minutes earlier than the kids, just so you're getting that small little moment to yourself. And in those 10 minutes, it might be doing like a nervous system reset of some calm breaths, a little bit of yoga or a walk, or even just a coffee by yourself. So just shifting it a little bit and having those micro moments when you're not able to get a full hour to yourself or 2 hours to yourself. And then as well, like in those like kind of sensory overload moments, getting it out of the body. So, using the body, there's huge research around using your body to reset and calm that nervous system when the chaos is still going on around you. So, that could look like, again, kind of similar to the question above, but around having dance parties with the kids, moving your body, stretching it out, trying to get that tension out of your body. Maybe it's using grounding. So, kind of using your five senses. What can you see? What can you taste? What can you smell? Just to get your mind off of everything else that's going on. Or as well, like more intense things like cold water on your face, quick cold shower, things like that to kind of have that nervous system reset. And then also asking for help if you can in those moments when you do need alone time. Can you check in with a friend of having a play date? But in that play date, you might go for a walk around the block while someone else has the kids, recognizing when you are feeling overstimulated and doing something that's going to kind of help with that. So, kind of having that awareness is really helpful. Okay, so the next question is similar to the previous question we just spoke about, but I'll make it a little bit more ADHD specific. So the next question is tips for mums with ADHD and how I can regulate with no spare time. So I went through a little bit of those regulation techniques, but if we're kind of thinking about ADHD, a lot of the time it's hard to kind of get those dopamine hits. When people have ADHD, their brain needs those dopamine hits. So that's why some of the tasks that are required in mothering or in parenting can feel so hard to tackle because it's so hard to get those dopamine hits or to do the tasks that you might need to do that other people might do that at ease with. So sensory regulation, particularly for people with ADHD. So, ADHD brains may struggle with overwhelm. So, small sensory hacks can help. So, that can be like little things like getting some sensory input to help you focus. That could be like chewing gum, having a crunchy snack, using fidget tools like, I don't know if you can see my hands, but having like a bracelet or like a fidget spinner, things like that to kind of help with that sensory regulation. Noise is obviously a big thing. So when you can, using cancelling headphones or playing white noise or playing your favorite music, calming music to help with that sensory overwhelm and sensory regulation. I guess in terms of, I guess, juggling parenting and ADHD, sometimes ADHD brains may make it difficult to be on time, and then that causes such additional stress. In parenting, you're often not on time anyway. So I guess that's just another stress to worry about. So having timers for everything, 5-minute reset timers, using apps, using visual schedules, iCalendars, I guess more coping strategies around that in terms of helping you manage the stress if you are feeling like you're late or if you're feeling like you're constantly missing appointments. Using the phone, it can be a really helpful tool to help with that, or even having timers to regulate. So reminding yourself to regulate, so a timer to do some deep breaths, things like that. I guess around ADHD and mess, I think I mentioned one before in the other one, but having a chaos basket or a dump basket or a basket where you can kind of toss everything in to deal with later, because your brain might see all this mess and it's just like so unstructured and it's like this huge mountain. So instead of trying to deal with it all at once, which is really, really difficult, using that dump basket or that chaos basket, I like to call it, to deal with that later. So to help with that sensory overload in those moments. Also, using some task pairing. So this is when you might match a boring task with something fun, which gives you that dopamine hit. So that could be like folding the laundry, but then listening to like your favorite podcast, or doing the dishes with, again, kind of listening to your favorite music, something that's going to give you that dopamine hit whilst you're doing that boring task, which is making you kind of feel overstimulated or really stressed. And then again, and I kind of always say it, is pairing it with compassion. I'm struggling with this because my brain is struggling to process all this information, or my brain is struggling with this executive function. So giving yourself that compassion. This is hard because it is hard for me. And that can, again, just help you soften into it, allow you to be okay with not being okay. Another one to add with that is, again, looking at the dopamine perspective of your ADHD brain will thrive off dopamine hits. So when you are feeling that overwhelm and stress, trying to find that, making things a game. And again, this can be fun with kids or changing the scenery. So everyone, or ADHD brains, I'm just going to use that term there. It's not very scientific, but likes novelty. So change the scenery. So with that overload or that overwhelm, going outside, going into a different room, or going down to the beach or a park or anything in nature just to change that scenery. And that's going to give you a little bit of that dopamine hit to feel more ease as well. Okay, the next question is, how do you suggest feeling paralyzed by loneliness? So I guess first, this can feel very overwhelming. And I think when this comes up, a lot of the time you might have more of a harsh inner critic or a harsh voice. And so if you can, one, acknowledge, which I guess you have, the feeling. So, and actually naming it. So saying, right now I'm feeling lonely, or right now I'm feeling isolated, or right now I'm really struggling and I'm feeling lonely, and pairing that with compassion again. So obviously I talk about compassion a lot, but I guess it's a lot of what my work is grounded in, is I guess cultivating more compassion for ourselves. So talking to yourself as if you would a friend, and trying to give yourself the kindness that you would a friend that you deserve. So right now I'm feeling lonely. It's okay. Validate your experience and then go gently on yourself. It often can feel quite lonely in, again, that parenting realm of being so caught up with your kids. It can feel quite isolating. So when you can, when you're feeling up to it, taking small, gradual steps to look at maybe some more social interaction. So maybe it is like a brief phone call with a friend or a text message or a short walk or kind of those small things that are going to help with more of that social connection, less of that social isolation, and more of that low pressure to do those things. And then I think as well, I guess loneliness, oh, it's such a big topic. So I guess we could go a lot, but I know we don't have time. But is learning more about yourself and learning to be more confident within yourself and learning to be more comfortable with yourself and in alignment with your values. So I think when we think about loneliness, we think it is around people, but often it's not. It's more internal, and it can be really useful to look at what your values are and if they are in alignment with how you're living. So asking yourself some questions of, what do I want my life to stand for? How am I feeling right now? Am I doing the things that I enjoy? Building some more insight into what's going on for you, looking at what you value, your value system, and how you can maybe bring it back into more alignment. I think when you kind of say paralyzed, I think that might be maybe something useful to kind of go, this is something maybe I need more support in terms of counseling or therapy and reaching out for support to move further with that. But I guess, yeah, some small tips that you could do is, yeah, really validating your experience, doing small micro things that are going to help you get those connections and giving yourself that compassion. How do I deal with the anxiety side of feeling bad and stressed out about people looking after my baby? Okay, so first, that's really natural, particularly in those early days when you're not used to letting someone care for your baby, and it's an instinctual thing. So it's primal. We were meant to kind of protect our child or have that fear when they're going out into the world or others looking after them. And so again, always I say acknowledge the feelings, validate the feelings. It's okay that you're feeling that way. It's a part of being a parent or being, yeah, having that protectiveness for your child. And then I guess it's around building that trust gradually. So eventually you are going to potentially have other people look after your children. So maybe for you to kind of help deal with that anxiety in the beginning, it's starting off really small. So whoever's going to be looking after your baby, being there for the first few times or staying with them for the first few times, just to help ease your anxiety. A lot of the time, the kids are okay, and it comes back to more about us. And so, if that's the case, using your own self-regulation tips when it's happening. So, whether that's deep breathing or using some cognitive strategies of, this is just my anxiety, my baby's safe, my baby's okay. And if you are needing reassurance, if they are being cared by someone else, asking for updates. I always do. Asking for a picture, asking how they're going. And that does typically help you feel better and ease into it. And I also think reminding yourself that typically most of the time they're in loving arms. So even if they are becoming overwhelmed or they're crying when you leave, they're still being safe and supported. And also, I guess, around parenting and anxiety and attachment. In terms of if we look at attachment, one part of attachment or in creating secure attachments with our kids is actually allowing them to have a safe space for exploring. And so eventually that's pushing them out into the world. Obviously, we're not doing that at the get-go, but that might look like letting them explore their outside world with a grandparent, with a daycare worker, with a babysitter, whatever that will look like. And then knowing that they're always coming back in loving arms or open loving arms. And so I think reminding yourself of those things can be really helpful in easing that anxiety, which can ease off after you've done it a couple of times, but it can also still stay. So it's just really reassuring yourselves, having those check-ins, and knowing that, yeah, they're okay in loving arms, and it's normal. It's that primal instinct to, want to protect your baby, but knowing they're safe and supported, and it's good, and it's okay for that kind of healthy, secure attachment. Next question is, what's the line between PMD and just being tired and frazzled? And how do I tell the difference? Okay, so PMD or postnatal depression is a mental health disorder that actually affects quite a lot of us, 1 in 7 new parents, and it's a persistent mood disorder. And so to tell the difference between PMD and the sleep deprivation and physical exhaustion that may come with parenting is typically PMD will be more severe and it will impact functioning. So postnatal depression, I'm just going to kind of read off the diagnosis here because that's probably easier. Postnatal depression is persistent sadness, anxiety, or feelings of hopelessness or worthlessness that can then be paired with significant changes in sleep patterns, whether that's insomnia or excessive sleeping and appetite disturbances. Often you might experience cognitive symptoms, so difficulty concentrating, making decisions, or remembering details. And then we often see that it is paired with loss of interest in activities you once enjoyed, a lot of withdrawal from social interactions, and sometimes it can lead to thoughts of self-harm or harming the baby. So typically, if we have PMD or postnatal anxiety or postnatal OCD or psychosis or anything like that, typically it's much more intense and lasts a lot longer than that kind of exhaustion or that postpartum fatigue. And usually it's much more severe and it will, as I said before, impact functioning. If you feel like you're experienced in any of these, I would definitely seek support because it is common. Like I said, it's 1 in 7 people experience PMD, postnatal anxiety, or postnatal depression. And so early intervention is super, super important. But I guess in terms of spotting the difference between that kind of regular, exhaustion, tiredness, low mood, the key difference there is the persistence of it. Like it'll last a lot longer. And the severity and how it's then impacting your functioning. Question number 7. It is obviously so important for us mums to do the work, and I think we are really good at being proactive about getting help so we don't pass our stuff onto our children. But how do we get the dads to do the same? So many of our partners are passing their shit down to our kids, but they are so much more reluctant to look within the source. Please help. I love this question because I do feel like it is so important for the dads to create more insight into what's going on for them or to kind of look backwards a little bit and go back to their past and ask those questions. How was I raised? What did I like? What didn't I like? What don't I want to pass down? And I guess sometimes to do that with your partner, it's trying to create that environment to have some of those conversations. So whether it is scheduling those weekly check-ins with each other to kind of go, hey, how are we parenting? Are we on the same page here? Asking those questions around the past of what do you want to take from the way you were parented into our kids? What don't you want to take? And that maybe having those more lighter conversations at the start might be helpful to expand those conversations a little bit. And sometimes just asking, sometimes we assume that they might not want to talk about that, but sometimes asking about it can be a helpful way to start that conversation again. suggesting psychological interventions. So like suggesting, hey, why don't you see a therapist? Have you ever thought about that? And again, this just might spark some conversations between you and your partner, because it is important for them to think about some of these questions. Looking at things in your area that might support men's mental health, whether that's like the men's shed or local places where you can suggest, particularly for new dads, to kind of go to chat to other dads, is really helpful. So that can hopefully normalize the experience for them. One that's going to mind that is obviously peninsula based is the Yeah Men group. So kind of having those conversations with other parents or men around mental health, around parenting, around what's going on for them, to again normalize and validate those experiences. Another one that I guess comes to mind is doing a program together. So the one that I'm currently thinking about is the Circle of Security. And so Circle of Security is a program that is focused on learning about attachments and how to, I guess, foster secure attachments in our children. Often the programs are often partners can attend for free or at a cheaper option. And so it's really helpful in that you learn about how to create a secure attachment and the importance of secure attachments. And often you learn about what's going on for you. So you kind of go backwards a little bit. You talk about, I guess, one, understanding attachment, but then understanding and reflecting on your childhood and your behaviors, and why you might do things the way you do. But I don't know, I was just thinking about circle of security. That could be a nice segue if you're open to doing that. I think every single parent should do the circle of security. Looking at like stripping it back, looking at what children need to kind of have that emotional and social development. But yeah, if you do it, partners dent free, I think that's a really helpful way in getting them to kind of, yeah, go backwards a little bit, figure out what's coming up for me and how to change some of the things that you want to change.
Thanks for listening to Ready or Not. If you liked the show, please tell your friends, subscribe, or write a review. You can also find us on Instagram at readyornot.pod. That's it for today. We'll see you next time.